Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you, the listener. Thanks, you, Kirk Stephenson, Miranda Janelle, that Charlie dude, and everybody. Welcome new patrons, Sean, Lars, and Rob.
Welcome.
On this episode of DTNS Streaming Services Want Your Money, how would you like to fork it over? Plus, YouTube wags the finger at OpenAI, and can we ever trust Google again? Probably not. Tasia's going to tell us why. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, April 5th, 2024. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Animal House, I'm Sarah Lane.
Drawing the top tech stories in Cleveland, I'm Len Peralta.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
And joining us, YouTuber and host of AI Named the Show, as well as Talk Techie to Me podcasts, Tasia Custodi. How's it going?
Hi, gang. How is everybody?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. It hailed today in Los Angeles earlier.
It did? I didn't see
that. At least in my neighborhood.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it was like, it was crazy. I was like, it's raining. It's hailing.
Talk about
and now
microclimate.
It's sunny. I don't know.
Well, hailing frequencies are open in Los Angeles, apparently. All right, let's start with the quick hits.
Reuters sources say Tesla no longer plans to make the Model 2, a more affordable sedan EV expected to be in the $25,000 range. The sources also said that Tesla will focus on more on bringing a fully autonomous car to market that could be used as a robo-taxi.
Samsung projects its operating profit for Q1 will rise 931%. Over last year. That's the kind of thing you get from a startup that's been in business 2 years. That's wild. It's thanks to memory chip prices. Samsung, if you didn't know, is the world's largest maker of DRAM for computers and phones. And memory prices dropped last year because there was a lot of excess inventory as demand for consumer electronics fell. But demand for data center building related to AI services is helping turn that trend around. Samsung may also expand more in the United States. CNBC sources say it plans to double its investment in plants in Taylor, Texas, and elsewhere near Austin to $44 billion. Samsung will also receive subsidies from the U.S. government through the CHIPS Act as part of that expansion. Mass production at the first of those facilities is expected to begin sometime next year. Or this year, sorry, sometime this year.
A California WARN notice that's required of large companies laying off large numbers of people indicates that Apple notified 614 employees on March 28th that they would be laid off as of May 27th. The notice didn't specify which departments the employees worked in, but their locations were often in smaller satellite offices where secret research projects are more often carried out, indicating maybe that is where the bulk of the layoffs are going to come from. That backs up the guess that these folks are, at least some of them, working on Apple's car tech project, Project Titan, that has reportedly been shut down. That project reportedly had about 2,000 people working on it overall.
Wired has an article about a former TikTok employee named Zen Goziker, who says he met with members of the U.S. Congress to share concerns about TikTok's data practices after he stopped working there. Goziker also claims to be the source behind articles critical of the data practices at Project Texas, which is run by USDS and handles all the TikTok data in the U.S. separately from TikTok and its parent company, ByteDance. Wired's Luis Marsalis considers many of the claims improbable, but they may have shaped current U.S. government views of the company.
The northern German federal state of Schleswig-Holstein has completed a pilot project and decided to convert its government offices from using Windows and Office to using Linux and LibreOffice. The state operates about 30,000 computers and hopes to prevent the flow of public data from possibly being sent to third countries.
I want to apologize. It was Louise Matsakis who wrote that Wired article, not Marsalis. That's my fault. Also, yes, we also know there was an earthquake in New York. So, you know, not just hail in Los Angeles. Everything's a little wild. All right. Let's start with Disney. Disney CEO Bob Iger told CNBC that the company will begin its password sharing crackdown in June. The crackdown will start in a few countries, in a few markets, before expanding to all Disney subscribers in September. So that's not just Disney Plus, that's Hulu and ESPN Plus, Hotstar, etc. Disney implemented specific rules about sharing passwords outside of the household. New subscribers were subject to them starting January 25th, and the terms changed for everybody on March 14th. When Disney Plus detects password sharing, it's going to prompt the user to get their own subscription. Account holders will also have an option to add a member from outside the house for an additional fee. Disney has not announced what that fee is going to be yet. Not coincidentally, Iger believes Disney's streaming business will be profitable by the end of the year. Streaming companies are moving from acquiring users to figuring out how to make streaming businesses work. There's also stories out today about Roku putting ads on anything coming into an HDMI port on a Roku TV. Paramount trying to sell you shirts during the CMT Music Awards. Tasia, as a viewer, how does this make you feel?
Well, first, I can just picture Paramount and what that's going to look like. I'm just picturing like a live infomercial, like there's an armoire on the stage now. And it's like, you too can have this brought to you by. It drives me batty. Like, do you guys even notice? Let's talk about old school TV for a second. But when they do very awkward product placement and you're like, this is clearly, or watch a reality show, anything to do with anything. And it's like, let's bring up the Expedia app. And it's like, oh, come on, guys. So I feel like this is all just where it's going and we're going to have to get used to it. But if I may, it wasn't that long ago. It seems like, because, you know, what is time? I'm sure it was long ago. Remember when Netflix tweeted out all those years ago? What was it like? Love is sharing a password.
Times have changed.
Yeah,
you know, HBO during the height of Game of Thrones had said, you know, at one time, it just means our shows are popular. We're cool with it.
With the torrenting, right? Not directly saying torrenting, but we knew what they meant, right?
It's just getting to the point now where like. People are getting ticked because we're already paying for a service. So like a lot of these services that are adding, even if it's not in the show, like adding ads in some capacity, whether that's like a visual ad or ad break, we're getting irritated because it's like we're already paying more money every year, by the way, because you up the price every year. And now we're getting like ad tiers and people that are already paying for something are like, well, wait, what am I really paying for then if this is no longer like structured to be on demand? Because, you know, a lot of them have already shifted even that model of like how they're delivering the content again. And I'm like, is this just like, are we going back in a circle? What's happening?
I really can't fault Disney or any company for saying, hey, we're going to crack down on password sharing. It's unfortunate if that happens to be something that you're benefiting from. And now it's like, oh, it doesn't work anymore. I remember the first time I ever had access to YouTube TV, a friend of mine had it. And he lived in a different state. He lived in Arizona. I lived in California, and it worked until it didn't. And I was like, bummer. All right, I'll just get it myself. Because I felt like the service was worth the money, you know, but I was going to ride that wave as long as I could. Totally. So, you know, I don't fault companies for saying, hey, you know, we want to keep track of, you know, our subscriber numbers. We want to make as much money as possible. But you're going to run the risk of a lot of people dropping off for that reason. Not only because now they have to pay, but just because now they have to have the difficult conversation with themselves of like, what am I really paying for? To your point, Tasia, it's like, you know, at the end of the month, you go, yeah, I might drop Disney. I don't really care mm-hmm. about it that much.
Well, and you should, right? If it gets to yeah. that point, you should drop it. That's how the message is sent. A lot of people say they'll cancel things because they're grumbly about it, and they don't. Like, that has been the stats, is that people are actually increasing the number of subscriptions they have, but they are being choosier about it. So they're canceling and adding in greater numbers. And I think that makes sense because we're in the position now where companies have stopped making things really cheap to acquire customers and are starting to try to consolidate their business. And that means you as a customer also should consolidate your business and decide, okay, which of these are actually worth the money that I'm paying? I think a lot of these other ideas are all in the execution, right? If the CMT Music Awards has somebody wearing like a pretty awesome shirt, and it's really easy on your app to be like, oh, I can buy that shirt, that's not bad. If they pull out an armoire and go like, hey, everybody, check out the, then yes, no, that is awful.
Well, maybe so, you like the armoire. I mean, it's not universally bad ideas.
No, but my point isn't that the armoire is good or bad. It's how they do it. Yeah, like, if it right. fits into the flow of things, great, right? If they're interrupting the music awards to explain an armoire, then that maybe that's not so good.
And yeah. if it's in your face constantly, like if the hosts have to be right. like, remember,
frequency too.
You can yeah. do this and do this. And it's like, enough. Like, we're yeah. here to watch an award.
Brought to you by Expedia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, every Apple TV Plus show will, with the exception of the new Lincoln show, because that would make no sense. But, you know, everybody on those shows, you know, is using Apple products. And I'm like, I get it. Not a big deal. I notice it. But I don't yeah. feel like it's like ruining the plot line in any other way. Man. So there are
Lincoln,
times where you're like,
an character. Apple wallet to get into the theater. Yeah. yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that booth. Boy, was he ahead of his time. But yeah, there are times where you're like, okay, maybe it's a little egregious, but whatever. You know, you can look past it. And there are other times, like you said, Tasia, where you're like, oh, come on. You know, this is getting a little ridiculous now.
Let me quickly check Wayfair. Oh, really? Okay, cool. Uh-huh. I'll yeah. just watch this ad now. yeah. This integrated ad.
That's what the Roku one bothers me the most, because it's putting an ad on something that's from someone else, right? You could have your mm-hmm. Apple TV plugged in, pause your Apple TV show, your Lincoln show, and then Roku puts an ad up. That better work right. That better not show up when I'm just trying to navigate the home screen and stuff like that. So that one seems dicier to me.
They'll have some kinks to figure out.
Probably.
Well, some kinks to figure out. Our next story falls right into that category. So back in March, OpenAI CTO Mira Murati would not confirm whether or not the company's Sora model that creates video from text prompts was trained on any data from YouTube or Instagram or Facebook. Either didn't know or couldn't confirm. YouTube CEO Neil Mohan now tells Bloomberg that if Sora did use YouTube data, it didn't have permission to do that, and it would be a clear violation of YouTube's terms of use. Those terms don't allow for transcripts or video to be downloaded without creator permission. Mohan said Google's Gemini abides by those rules. No, of course, that is a Google company, so that's a little bit different, but says Gemini only is training on YouTube data where the creators have licensed contract and given permission. Now, Tasia, these are big companies starting to question each other's data collection policies. So what do you think is next as far as how enforcement will play out?
Well, they're first going to have to prove it, which
exactly.
I wish them luck.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, and OpenAI has been sort of famously tight-lipped about how their data is collected based on, you know, certain models that they've been training.
And I think that's why this became the story it was, is because now we're in this realm of neither confirm nor deny means probably, it probably happened, and it's probably happening, is what we're all making this assumption. So they're going to claim on their end that it's whatever fares under the Fair Use Act or whatever. It falls under the Fair Use Act, which, you know, clearly for a company like YouTube is saying it doesn't. So that's why it would go back to, well, how do they prove it? Because as you guys know, and I've talked a lot about before, YouTube, and I'm sure a lot of the other companies, has a lot of issues when it comes to even things like where all their traffic comes from. And they just have a blanket policy like, well, it's up to the creator to control traffic when, like, they're controlled by like the, one of the biggest tech companies in the world. So what do you mean? Like if you can't figure out where your traffic's coming from. So that's why I just say good luck proving it, because how can they possibly do it? So like as far as enforcement, let's say, because, you know, Sundar Pichai came out yesterday and said basically how he wants to use AI to help with regulation and enforceability and stuff. And it's like, well, how? And then how is that going to impact the end user as well? Because how are we supposed to trust now these AI algorithms that things aren't getting flagged inappropriately? Or like, there's just so many different implications now that I just think this is like such a new world that they're wading into, and they don't even have the answers.
Yeah. Because I don't think there
are answers.
Leaves
us a little concerned.
Yeah.
No, that's the thing. Like, how do you prove that? Mm-hmm. It's like, do you guys remember when the New York Times was like, hey, we figured out you're scraping our content, OpenAI. Well, how did they figure it out? They basically tricked ChatGPT and like kept feeding it all these different paragraphs from the same articles until it finally gave it what they wanted.
Which I would
too. So it's
too.
Like, well, right. It's like, oh, leave me alone. Stop pestering. But it's that exact thing of how else do you prove this? So what's YouTube going to do? And like YouTube and their Gemini thing, I think, is also kind of a bit of a, we need to be skeptical about what they're saying, because like now with advanced, they're letting people connect their accounts and stuff. And not just that, but now other users can go on Gemini Advanced and say, like, pull out information directly from a YouTube video without somebody having to go watch that YouTube video. So there's also things like that in terms of content creators on any of these platforms need to be aware of. It's no longer even just your data, but it's like your views. Mm-hmm. It's where the traffic is coming from. There's just so many layers to it, you guys. Oh,
there. I would say in the most dramatic outcome of something like this scenario, and this could happen between a lot of companies, but let's say, you know, it's, you know, OpenAI / Microsoft versus YouTube / Google in this situation. They could go to court. Let's say YouTube wins. OpenAI has to disclose that they did do this, which is against YouTube's terms of service. Again, this is hypothetical. I'm not saying this is happening, but let's say it does. Okay, well, then OpenAI would have to disclose a lot more information than they want anybody to know about what their models are trained on and how their models are getting smarter over time. And then let's say, you know, a judge or jury says, all right, well, you have to just get all the YouTube stuff out of there. Well, now it gets interesting, because OpenAI can say, well, we did. Okay, we mm-hmm. did. But, you know, the model, does the model, you know, revert back to V1 when it's on V12?
Well, yeah. What does it mean to say get all the stuff out of there? Because that's not how these models work. The model is a relational database of learned connections.
You would almost have to start over.
Doesn't include any of YouTube's, you know, stuff. So kind of the damage is done. You can't pull something out that's not actually there. It's the fact that it was used to train it. That seems to be what bothers people. It's interesting. The Wall Street Journal asked if because Marathi said we used public available data and licensed data. And Wall Street Journal says, does that include YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook? And Marathi is like, I don't know. I'll check. Went back and confirmed that licensed material included content from Shutterstock, which kind of left unanswered the question of, OK, but does it include YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook? And I wonder if that story kind of blowing up into like, oh, it looks like OpenAI might be using YouTube stuff, becomes something that YouTube doesn't want other companies to think is true. So it's less about we're going to sue OpenAI and more about we need to make a public statement that if they were doing that, that would not be okay. So don't anybody else get any ideas.
Bingo.
on the subject of AI, because we have a lot of those in shows these days. Meta says that starting in May, it's going to expand the content it labels as made by AI by looking at industry standard AI image indicators, or when users just identify their content as AI generated on their own. Meta's vice president of content policy, Monica Bickert, wrote that the company will only remove AI generated material if it violates our policies against voter interference, bullying and harassment, violence and incitement, or any other policy in our community standards.
Yeah, and that is in response to the Oversight Board recommendation. They actually went farther than the Oversight Board had even recommended. All right. From AI to TikTok. This week's top five is out. It's 60 seconds long. Doesn't take you much time to get informed on a cool thing that I have broken down into the top five things you need to know about technology. And this week's is things you probably didn't know about TikTok. You can catch it at Daily Tech News Show on TikTok itself, DTNS Pix, DTNS PIX on Instagram, and at youtube.com/Daily Tech News Show.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Tuesday, April 2nd, Google Podcasts finally sunset in the United States. Later this summer, it's sunsetting everywhere. The website followed suit later in the week with podcast.google.com shutting down April 4th here in the U.S. The site will allow users access to a settings page where they can move subscriptions over to YouTube Music, Google's official replacement for the podcasting service, or download an OPML file that you can use with third-party podcasting apps. That export functionality will remain until everything is done on July 30th. Tasia, it seems like you were pretty invested in Google Podcasts. What are you going to do now?
I liked Google Podcasts. It did one thing and one thing very well. That was organize and play podcasts. That's all I wanted from an app. I was always between kind of that and Stitcher, guys. RIP to another one, if we may. But right now, I actually just made a YouTube video on it too. I have finally made a switch, you guys, to another app because... I have multiple devices. One's Android, one's iPhone. And on iPhone, can I just tell you, Apple Podcasts, she's not cutting it. It's not great.
Yeah, I've
especially
heard.
When you come from like a Google Podcast or a Stitcher. So I liked Overcast a lot. Specifically the feature to share clips up to a minute of a voice or video clip. How great is that? And then you can share that out so like someone else can listen to that podcast if you're like, hey, you should listen to this. But I have decided on an oldie but a goodie, Pocket Casts.
Yay.
Guys, does it get better than Pocket Casts?
No.
The UI is so good. And can I tell you why? And I'm probably not going to use the right terminology, but you know when you go to tap on like an image, the image of the podcast, and sometimes some of these apps don't bring you to like that podcast page with all the episode list. I just want to go to the podcast page with the episode list. I just like scrolling back through episodes. It's weird. And Pocket Casts is so great for this. It's so easy to use. It's so intuitive.
I don't think it's weird at all. I do that too.
Okay, good.
And Apple Podcasts, which I do use, it's just, I don't know. I know I have many other third-party options, but I'm just kind of using Apple Podcasts these days. But that is the number one thing that drives me absolutely baddie, mm-hmm. is, you know, I'll kind of be like, oh, this episode is playing, but, you know, I haven't listened to this podcast in, you know, like maybe a couple of weeks, or, you know, maybe it's a Daily Show type thing. I just want to go to the show page. And that's always very hard to do.
Yes. You tap on it and then it opens the freaking episode and you're like,
right.
No.
Or like, or yeah, you're trying to, yeah, like it does drive me crazy. The UI does. So Pocket Casts, it's a good reminder. I know a lot of folks who listen to DTNS are Pocket Cast fans as well.
Yeah, me too. I use Pocket Cast because I can sync it across my Pixel Fold and my iPhone, right? So that I can pick up where I left off,
which works.
Is pretty great.
Android, iOS, it's also very easy to import.
Yeah. Export, import, all there. So, mm-hmm. okay. So you found a home that isn't YouTube Music for podcasts, which is what Google wanted you to do. David Pierce from The Verge wrote a piece about Google podcast shutdown being part of what he calls the Google cycle, and that the repeated killing of services like Google Podcast, which, by the way, used to be in Google Music before it was then kicked back out, is making David Pierce more resentful and less trustful of Google's current and any future products. Now, some people may say late to the party, David Pierce. but Tasia, how do you feel about this?
Oh, yeah. I loved his piece. But that was my first reaction was this is what makes you lose faith in Google. Like, this is classic Google playbook. Let's throw everything at the wall, see what sticks. And then we're just going to move stuff to the Google graveyard. It's such a classic move that I just think this is the one where he's hanging his hat on. Like, this is it to me. Like, this is the final straw. Do you guys, can we please take a moment? Google Reader, RIP, was one of the best things in the world. This is way before Pocket, way before any other, you know, Feedly, whatever. I loved Google Reader. Add it to the list of dead Google products. Allo, Duo, Google Plus, Hangouts
on air.
I mean, it goes on.
Yeah.
So it's just really funny that this was it. But I do agree with his sentiment in that, you know, the usability of, like, podcast discovery, first of all, on YouTube is a complete joke. And he brought up a really good thing in the article, which it could have been great, right? Like, if you know, they've been pushing shorts so much on YouTube, which is like a whole other argument we could talk about on a different day. But say you discover something in shorts, to be able to tap through easily, if that would have been a feature to tap through and subscribe on Google Podcasts, like, they could have made this marriage work so well. And instead, Google's done this thing where they want to funnel everything onto YouTube and they want YouTube to be all things to all people. And I cannot stand when platforms do that. You can do one thing and do it really, really well and just kill at that game that they had done for so many years, because you start to confuddle what the service actually was. And beyond, like, searchability, I mean, if you guys actually think about it, podcasts on YouTube is really just a playlist. Like, that's all it is. Yeah. They haven't done anything with it. It's a playlist. So back when all those articles broke and they're like, podcast now on YouTube. No, it's not. It's you uploading a video like you normally would into a playlist. So it's kind of this really messy way of doing it. But he's completely right as to why. It all comes back to the money, because ad revenue. And they're like, if we can stick ads on videos, and that's more lucrative than our podcast app over here, then that's what we're going to do. Users be darned, unfortunately. Yeah. And y'all know how I feel about the ad revenue situation, because YouTube's still taking mine.
I feel like there's two big things that Google keeps missing. And one is they don't stick with good things long enough. Right. They tend to just decide, well, it's not the success that search is or Gmail, so kill it. And I think they are guilty of that. Sometimes I think they get a bad rap for killing some things. I'm like, yeah, that wasn't that popular. Google Wave, as fun as it was, nobody used, right? But there's some on the edge like Google Plus, and then there's some like Google Podcasts that I think were doing well. The second thing I would add is, why not transition it instead of kill it? I think a lot of times they just close stuff instead of merging. what if you just took Google Podcasts and renamed it YouTube Podcasts to begin and say, like, hey, we've got a YouTube Music app. We've got a YouTube Studio app. Now we've got a YouTube Podcast app.
I mean, then you could start to, like, such a simple thing, right? That would make so much sense.
And then you could still integrate podcast into YouTube to be like, well, hey, if you're in the main YouTube app, you can get it there too, just like you can with music and with YouTube TV and everything else. But if you want to experience it outside, we'll still let you do that. There's lots of options for them to transition. Maybe mine is not the right one, but there are better ways than just like, oh, yeah, no, we're going to kill that now too.
And well, renaming would be right the whole, like, Google's alley.
Oh, go ahead, Tasia. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just saying that's what Google loves to play with, naming conventions too. How many times do they rename things? Oh, so yeah, that would have been right up their alley.
Yeah, Google Play Music, Google Podcasts, YouTube Music.
There was something before podcasts were in Google Music too, and I don't remember what it was off the top of my head. But I remember when podcasts came to Google Music, then they got spun back out because Google Music became YouTube Music. But they didn't rename Google Music YouTube Music. They built a whole new app, and Jeff, it's a mess.
One of my biggest pet peeves is when a service calls itself music, but you're supposed to know that podcasts live inside. Now, if you know, then you're not going to be mad forever because you're like, okay, now I know. But it's really just, it's a terrible user experience. It's like, it's, you know, how a podcast used to be bundled into iTunes, you know, in the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's very
similar. I mean, you can still access podcasts that way, but there's a podcast app now and an Apple Music app. And that's the way it always should have been. It's just that we didn't used to have podcasts. So, gosh, you know, we've been doing this a while. Google, get with the program.
It's a cultural thing.
I'd be curious to know. Yeah, and I'd be curious to know too from other users and the user standpoint, because, you know, like, YouTube will only share so much data. Is like, I want to know how all of this is actually affecting the YouTube platform, because it's one thing from a creator's end and what I can complain about, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and say,
yeah,
this is why I don't like it. But from the user end, very curious to see, are people actually doing this? Like, I get it in terms of, like, visual podcasts. Like, there's one podcast I subscribe to that I actually watch it, but it's because it's an actual visual. To me, it's just like it's a YouTube video. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
even
yeah.
though it's his podcast, it's a YouTube video. But the rest, all my podcasts, I listen on dedicated podcast apps. So that's what I'm just curious to see. Like, is this really working for YouTube in terms of the revenue, and is it working for the users? Is everybody going there for podcasts? I don't know.
Anecdotally, it doesn't sound like it. Most of the people I've talked to who are moving off Google Podcasts are moving to Overcast or Pocket Cast or something like that. So, all right. Before we get out of here today, let's check out the mailbag. What do we got, Sarah?
Let's do it. Scott wrote in about our conversation in Good Day Internet yesterday about the limitations of AI image generation. Scott says, one of the issues I've had is trying to describe different actors in an image. Example, trying to get a redhead and a brunette in an image resulting in two redheads or two brunettes, or a redheaded person and a gray wolf ended up with a red wolf. This might not even be an image set for training, but just being able to parse identifying features from the prompt and applying them to each figure. I haven't used Google's generator, but this is based off my experience with other AI image tools.
Yeah, this was in response to the discussion that was kicked off by, was it Meta's Llama?
Was making
everyone Asian.
It was having a hard time, with different races,
they fixed it,
even when
it wouldn't
specifically
make
prompted
Asian. And then, it had other problems following on that.
I mean, I gotta say, Scott, the red wolf does sound cool, but yes, if you want a redheaded human and a gray wolf, you don't want a red wolf.
Yeah, I think this is a parameter issue when it can't handle those two things. That is what I've been told anyway. And then there's filters and tuning to try to make it do better things that cause it to have issues like it did yesterday. All right. There is so much fodder in this show for Len Peralta to draw today. I'm very curious what he decided to illustrate. Len, what did you do?
You know, doesn't the term Google cycle sound like a podcast, like a good podcast? Like,
yeah,
with a guy who has a kind of an NPR, smooth NPR voice.
Welcome to Google Cycle.
Yeah, welcome to the final episode of Google Cycle, the podcast where we discuss the lifespan of Google initiatives.
I thought you said Ghoul cycle. I was like, oh, I don't know.
Well, yeah. You know, Google loves to kill its children, and this is sort of the, the image that I had here.
You really went for it.
Yeah. This is heavy April 5th fodder here.
He is sponsored by Total Wine, though, so that's a good thing. So, yeah, this image, Google cycle, which shows a very, kind of cool podcaster dude there, ready to get his fate. You can actually get this right now at my Patreon, patreon.com/Len, where you can back me. And everybody gets it now. You're not just have to be at the DTNS lover level to get it. Or you can go to my old online store, lenperaltastore.com. You can get it just right there on the front page. Or you can go ahead and just don't even get it. Just hire me for something. Commission me.
Google Podcast Eternal Sleep, brought to you by Purple Mattress.
It's nice. Yeah,
Purple Mattress. On Expedia.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Also, Tasia Custodi, such a pleasure to have you on the show as always. Let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
You can head on over to my YouTube channel. It's just at Tasia Custodi. I'm at Tasia Custodi on all the things, and join friend of the show, Tristan Jutra, and I for AI Named This Show. New episodes every Friday. We try our very best to dive in to the realm of AI. There's a lot.
Yeah,
you have a lot of material. I'll give you that. Yeah.
For sure.
It's a panic. Just put it that way. Every episode's a panic.
Folks, go find out what they're doing today. AINamedThisShow.com. Patrons, stick around for the extended show. Good day, Internet. It's Friday and time for a very pertinent quiz. Roger outdid himself with a quiz specifically about Google's launched and killed off products. Can you remember them all before we do? Stick around.
Just a reminder, we do DTNS live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's 2000 UTC. And you can find out more about joining us live at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back on Monday with Chris Ashley joining us. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.
This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people: host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt, host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane, executive producer and booker Roger Chang, producer, writer, and co-host Rob Dunwood, video producer and Twitch producer Joe Kuntz, technical producer Anthony Lemos, Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos, science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans, social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding, our mods, Beatmaster, W. Scottis 1, BioCow, Captain Kipper, Steve Guadarrama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, a.k.a. Gadget Virtuoso, and J.D. Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luters, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Live art performed by Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Tatiana Matias. Patreon support from Tom McNeil. Contributors for this week's shows include Justin Robert Young, Scott Johnson, and Patrick Norton. Our guest this week was Tasia Custodi. And thanks to all the patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.